Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, good morning and welcome to Hoboken Grace. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and we are in the midst of this conversation called A Grown-Up Love, and we are just having a lot of fun with this. But I need to talk to you for a second about something, because the band is working very, very hard for us to be able to enjoy this series, and you guys are a bunch of stiffs. All right, you need to relax. And here's the thing, you are showing no integrity in this at all, because last night at the bar, you sang that song at the top of your lungs. At the top of your lungs. And then you're going to come in here and be like, oh, no, I'm just going to sit back. And No. We are going to have fun with this. So next week, I expect a little different response as we walk through this together. And we're diving into this conversation called A Grown-Up Love and looking at the idea of relationships and how do we love well? How do we love in a powerful, meaningful, lasting way? And we've been looking at how the scriptures come to us and they say, okay, you have some ideas of love that to be honest with you are childish. They're childish. And if you want to be able to experience the love that God created you for, if you want to be able to experience powerful, meaningful, lasting love, you're going to have to put these things behind you. In 1 Corinthians, it says it this way. It says, when I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. He's talking about this in the context of love and understanding what love is. He says, you're still thinking like a child. And it's time for you to step out of those things in order for you to be able to experience what God really has for you in love. And so for the past couple of weeks, we've been walking through some of these childish things that we hold on to. And we put behind us the idea that they lived happily ever after because they found each other. And if I find the right relationship, then I'm going to be happy forever. We put behind us that idea. Last week, we put behind us the idea that love is when I find someone that I'm never going to have to be patient with because they're so perfect. And realizing that, no, love is all about patience. And it's going to be a huge part of what it means to love, and we've been working through these things and putting these things behind us. And as we come together today, we're going to continue that journey as God is trying to introduce us to what powerful, meaningful, lasting love really looks like. And in 1 Corinthians 13, he's teaching us this. It says, love is patient and kind. That's what we talked about last week. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable. It keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. We started last week, love is patient and kind. He's calling us back to the fruit of the Spirit and understanding where love begins. And then this week we come into this next line. It says, love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. And it's interesting because he brings these four things together. And at first I see how two of them connect, but I don't necessarily see how all four of them connect. I understand boastful and proud. I see how those go together, but jealous and rude, is this just a random list or are these actually connected? Does he share them in the same sentence because of the fact that they're actually connected? And if so, how? And then what does that mean about love? And then what is the childish idea of love that he's speaking to? And at first I thought it was just kind of random and maybe the two middle ones were connected. But then the more time that I spent with it, the more I began to realize that no, he's actually talking about an idea of love that we have, and he's counteracting it with this idea that God says, no, this is what love really looks like. Because you see, we grow up, and our entire lives are about writing our story. It's all about our story. And from the very beginning, it's about, okay, how are you going to write your story and make sure that you write a good story? And everyone's constantly asking you about your story and how you're going to write your story. So who are you going to be and what are you going to grow up to be and what are you going to do with your life? It's all about how you're going to write your story. Nobody asks you about someone else's story. It's all about, okay, how am I going to write my story? And it seems like my parents are all about helping me write my story too. My siblings, they struggle with that. But the rest of the world seems to be about how to write my story. And it's all about my story. And so we have this idea of love. We have this idea of love, that love is when we find someone who enhances our story or who celebrates our story. We think that love is when we find someone who celebrates us. We think that love is when we find someone who celebrates us. That love is when we find our cheerleader. We find our cheerleader. I think that the song goes something like this. Right? This is how it goes. It's so funny. I played that song in the first service. They did the same thing that most of you did. They just looked ashamed and looked down at the floor. I saw how you do it. The music came on and there was recognition in your face, and then there was shame and you looked down because you knew the song and you didn't want anyone around you to know that you knew that song. And rightfully so, because it might be one of the most sexist songs you've ever heard in your life. But we do. We have this idea that love is when I find someone who celebrates me and enhances my story. Oh, this person is a good addition to my story. I'll write them into my story. They're going to make my story better, and they love my story, and they celebrate my story, and they celebrate me. Man, when she looks at me, I feel like a million bucks. When she looks at me, I'm on top of the world. When he looks at me, and we even talk about this to one another. Yeah, he just can't get enough of this. It's just, that's the way, she's obsessed, man. She's just obsessed. And we talk about how I found someone who celebrates me. Or maybe don't say that. I found someone who enhances my story. I'm going to write into my story, and that's going to enhance my story. But again, we've grown up with this idea, and we bring it into love. We think that, okay, life is about writing my story, and now I found someone who enhances that I'm going to write into, someone who celebrates my story. And then God comes in and he says, that's not actually what love looks like. He said, love isn't when you find someone to celebrate you. Love is when you decide to celebrate someone else. Love isn't when you find someone who enhances your story. And really, at the heart of it, this is what the scriptures teach us about marriage, that love isn't when you find someone who makes your story better. Love is when you put your story down and you pick up the story of someone else. When the scriptures teach us about marriage, it's the idea that I'm going to lay down my hopes and my dreams and my goals and my future, and I'm going to pick up yours. And I'm going to begin to live for yours, to celebrate your story. Which is why the scriptures are so intentional and work so hard to teach us about how commitment and intimacy need to be tied to character. Throughout the Proverbs, it's constantly teaching us about how commitment and intimacy must be tied to character. Why? Because you don't want to hand your dreams and your hopes and your future to a fool. So therefore, when it comes to who you're going to be committed to and who you're going to be intimate with on an ongoing, long-term basis, you need to make sure that it's tied to character. But unfortunately, this is one of those areas where our childish idea of love, it robs us of being able to actually experience love, because we think that love is when we find someone who celebrates us. And I have this conversation oftentimes with people who are in repetitive, destructive relationships, and they think that love is when I find someone who celebrates me. And so it's like, well, yeah, I know that they don't have any character, but they make me feel like, or I know that they don't have any character, but they look at me like, and we celebrate that. Really, the only thing that we celebrate about them is how they celebrate us. Listen, because I see it all the time in relationships. The only thing there is to celebrate about them, because there is no character. There's no character there. You can't really trust them. There's nothing really to celebrate about their story outside of the fact that they celebrate us. But they celebrate us in a way that we're attracted to, and we think, man, that's what love is, the way that they celebrate me. And so we keep going back to that relationship, or we keep going back to those relationships because of the way that they look at us, or because of the way that they value us, even though there's no character there whatsoever. And God says, if the only thing that there is to celebrate about them is the way that they celebrate you, you are in deep trouble. You are in deep trouble. But we have that idea of love, that love is when I find someone who celebrates me. God says, no, actually love is when you find someone that you're going to celebrate, that you find someone that you lay down your story and you pick up theirs. Which is why when he comes to this passage, he says love isn't jealous. Why isn't love jealous? Because when you've picked up their story, you no longer become jealous of their advancement. You no longer become jealous. And I know sometimes when we hear jealousy, we just think of jealousy outside the relationship. But he's not talking about jealousy outside the relationship as far as other people are concerned. He's talking about actually jealousy inside the relationship. That's why it's included in this list. That's how it fits with proud and boastful and rude. The reason that it fits is he's saying, listen, inside the relationship, love isn't jealous. When you begin to pick up the stories of the people around you, you don't become jealous. You say, well, how jealous in a relationship? That doesn't happen. Really? What about when your friend got engaged? Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have gone there. It happens. Your friend got that promotion. Your coworker got that promotion. God says, love isn't jealous. When you pick up the story or the stories of the people around you, you don't become jealous. I hear it inside of marriages. Well, we made this decision for your career, so now it's time for you to make the decision for my career. And there's this back and forth and the counting and the weighing. And says, no, that's not how love works. Why? Because love is when you lay down your story and you pick up theirs. He says, love isn't jealous, love isn't proud. The definition of pride is a feeling or deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements. He says, love isn't proud. Why? Because love doesn't derive satisfaction from its own achievements. It derives satisfaction from the achievements of those that it loves. It is not satisfied when it sees its own accomplishment. It's satisfied when it sees the people around them growing and thriving and advancing. Love derives its satisfaction from seeing other people achieve their dreams and their goals. He says, love isn't proud. This is actually what Ephesians 5 is all about. In Ephesians 5, it's talking about marriage, and throughout the passage, it's actually talking about all sorts of different relationships. As the passage begins, it says this, Ephesians 5:21, it says, "And further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ." And this entire idea of submission, in Ephesians 5, if you get the chance to be able to read through it, it's really powerful. This, all these different ways, and in all these different relationships, how submission works out. It begins in verse 21. It says, "This, I want for you to submit to one another." And then it begins to walk through, okay, husbands, this is what it looks like for you to submit. Wives, this is what it looks like for you to submit. Parents, this is what it looks like for you to submit. And it works through all these different relationships in life. And he said, this is what submission looks like. And really, as you read through, what you realize is that his definition of submission is exactly this idea, that his definition of submission is that you lay down your story and you pick up theirs, which is why, as he's talking through it, he says, husbands, this is what it looks like for you to submit. He says, you become obsessed with the growth and the thriving of your wife. He says, the same way that Jesus is obsessed with the growth and the thriving of the church, you become obsessed with that in your wife's life. Why? Because you lay down your story and you pick up hers. He says, I want for you to submit to one another. In other words, I want for you to begin to get more excited about their accomplishment than your own. I want for you to begin to celebrate their accomplishment more than your own. I want for you, and I love this word, I want for you to be more satisfied with their accomplishment than your own. Because love isn't when you find someone who enhances your story. Because love is actually when you lay down your story and you pick up theirs. And you begin to find satisfaction in each page that's written. You begin to find satisfaction every time you see growth, achievement, accomplishment. We see their dreams become a reality. So this is what love looks like. It says love isn't jealous, it's not proud. It says love isn't boastful. In other words, love doesn't honor itself, it honors the other. Love isn't boastful. Love doesn't honor itself, it honors the other. It's constantly looking for opportunities to be able to celebrate and honor the other person. It's constantly looking for opportunities to be able to make a big deal out of the other person. When's the last time you celebrated your spouse in public? When's the last time you made a big deal out of your friend in public? He said, this is what love looks like. It's not that you make a big deal out of your story. Do you spend more time talking about your story or their story? Let me ask you a different question, because this is kind of how it shows up inside of our culture. If I were to look at your Instagram feed, are there more pictures of you or other people? Nervous laughter. Oh, I hope he doesn't look at my feed. He said, love doesn't make a big deal out of your story. It makes a big deal out of theirs. It's not boastful. Now, this is one of those interesting ones when it comes to how we interact with one another, because this is one of those places in life. There are certain places spiritually where you can do something, and we need to pay very close attention to these things, because they're incredible tools for us. This is one of those places in life where you can do something physically that will impact you spiritually. There are certain areas in life where Jesus calls us to obedience, even when our heart doesn't align with that obedience, because of the fact that obedience in faith will produce a spiritual result. Are you tracking with me here? There are certain times where we feel a certain way, and Jesus says, okay, you're not going to resolve that feeling and then take the step. He says, no. You need to take the step in faith and obedience, and it will resolve what's happening inside of you. This is one of those areas, because when it comes to this idea of, okay, I'm going to put down their story and I'm going to pick up mine, I'm going to leave behind the childish idea of love, that it's about writing my story, and I'm going to understand the truth of what love is and step into it powerfully and meaningfully in a way that lasts. Jesus, this is one of those tools that we can use, because if you begin to practice honoring the people that you love, it will impact your heart. If you begin to celebrate their story publicly, it will impact your heart. And it may be really, really painful to do that at the beginning, because your heart is not where it needs to be. And you're jealous, and you're not finding satisfaction in their achievement. And there's something inside of you that says, man, I want to be where they are. I want to have what they have. I want to see what's happening in their relationship, happening in my relationship, whatever it may be. If you step into that and you follow God and what he's called us to do, which is actually what he's talking to us about in 1 Peter 3:7. In 1 Peter 3, he's talking to us about how we honor one another. And he talks about it specifically in terms of marriage. He says, in the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. And throughout the passage, he's talking about how we honor one another. Throughout the scriptures, inside of marriage, we're called to honor one another. Inside of relationships, we're called to honor one another. And this is one of those places where if you will step forward in obedience in your life, it will have a spiritual impact on you. And so you're sitting here and saying, I don't know how to be able to find satisfaction in their accomplishment the way that I find satisfaction in my accomplishment. I don't know how to not struggle with jealousy. I don't know how. If you begin to practice honoring them, it will begin to impact your heart. It will begin to change the way that you feel about what's happening in their story and the way that you feel about what's happening in your story. I talked about this a little bit on Easter, how I began to pray for and celebrate the churches that were growing in the city, even when Hoboken Grace wasn't growing. And something happened in my heart because of the fact that in faith I was following God and honoring them and picking up their story and living in love towards them. This is one of those ways that you can begin to move forward in this. God doesn't come to us and say, this is what I want for you to do, and then you figure it out. No, he's constantly trying to teach us not only what love looks like, but then also how to be able to practice that on an ongoing basis. If you want to begin to put this in place, figure out, okay, how can I celebrate in a consistent way my spouse or the person that I'm dating or the friends that I have around me or my coworkers? I'm going to figure out how to make a big deal out of them instead of making a big deal out of me. He says, love isn't boastful. He says, love makes a big deal out of their accomplishments, not its own. And if you follow him in that, I'm telling you, it will change your heart. But you're going to have to do it in faith at first, because it's going to be really painful. You could be like, you know what? You did a great job getting that promotion, and I'm really excited for you, and we're going to make a big deal out of so-and-so, and everything inside of you is going to feel like it's dying. It's going to feel like it's dying. You know why? Because it is dying. There's an idol that's dying inside of you. It is, and it needs to die. It needs to die so that you can begin to know what love is. You gotta celebrate them. Love isn't boastful. It's not jealous. It's not boastful. It's not rude. Now, at first, when I came to rude, I thought, well, okay, I understand how the first three, but then rude, how does that fit in? But I think, again, he's sticking with the same idea. And I think what he's saying to us is this: love isn't a critic of the other person. It's a fan. It's not rude. It's not stepping in to constantly criticize or to demean or to belittle the other person. And I think some of you think that your spouse has been given you as a gift from God to fix their lives. Some of you think that. You think that your spouse has been given you, and it is the best thing that ever happened to your spouse because he gave you to them to fix their lives. And you are so grateful that God gave you to them. Because where would they be without you? And you're constantly stepping into their lives. And they, if we were to sit down and ask them, okay, who is your biggest critic? They'd say, my spouse. Listen to me. You have to end that. You have to end that. One of the ways that I can tell that a marriage is beginning to move in a dangerous and destructive direction is when I begin to see spouses criticize one another in public. If you have a habit of criticizing your spouse in public, it needs to end today. It needs to end today. Your spouse doesn't need another critic. They don't need another critic. No one in this room needs another critic. The world's full of critics. Every time we turn around, we encounter another one. God calls us throughout the scriptures, almost as much as he calls us to love, you know what else he calls us to do? He calls us to encourage. Throughout the New Testament, everywhere. Encourage, 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 encourage. You are not... You are not called to be the critic. You're called to be the fan. To be the one who cheers louder than anyone else for the people that you love. To be the one who cheers louder than anyone else for the people that you love. And if someone were to sit down and say to them, okay, who's your biggest critic? You would be nowhere on that list, but who's your biggest fan? They talk about you. That should be your goal. Why? Because that's what love is. That's what love is. It's when you lay down your story and you pick up theirs. You begin to live for someone else's story. And I know that some of you are here, and all of us, when we hear this message, all of us, when we hear God talking to us about love in this way, all of us think the very same thing. Many of you have been thinking it throughout the entire message. You're thinking to yourself, yeah, but if I live that way, my dreams will never become a reality. If I lay down my story and I pick up someone else's, my dreams are never going to become a reality. And here's the truth of it, because I'm not going to lie to you. Here's the truth of it. If you walk the way of love, if you live the way that God is calling you to live when it comes to love, the things of this world and the things that this world clamors for and the things that this world values and the accomplishments and the achievements, many of them you will not see. And if those are your dreams and those are your goals, the way of love will be very difficult for you. But if you take up the dream and the goal of Jesus, you see, many people looked at Jesus and said, well, you're getting walked on. You're getting taken advantage of. You can't live that way. You're never going to achieve the dreams and the goals and all the things that this world cares about. But you see, Jesus had a different dream and a different goal. Jesus had a dream and a goal of helping people understand that love isn't what they thought. Jesus had a dream and a goal of redefining what love actually was. And Jesus had a dream and a goal of introducing people to a Father that was defined by that love. If your dreams and goals in life, if your primary dreams and goals in life are the things of this world, the way of love will be very difficult for you. But if you embrace the dream and the goal of Jesus, which was to redefine what people knew as love and to introduce people to the Father who is defined by that love, to change how they knew him, then the way of love will actually walk you right into the midst of your dream and your goal. Because you may not accomplish all of that stuff that's meaningless and that will end. But you will help the people around you understand that love is not what they thought. the Father is not who they thought. Help them to redefine what love actually looks like and means. You say, if I lay down my story and I pick up theirs, no one's going to pick up mine. Listen to me. There is someone who picked up yours. There is someone who picked up yours. You see, Jesus laid down his story. And he picked up yours. And he celebrates you. There's like five of you are excited about that. That's good. Stiffs. He picked up yours. And he celebrates you. And he's cheering for you. And he's working for you to be all that you were created to be. And for you to know a love that's powerful and meaningful and lasting. The scriptures say he fights for you, that he's your advocate. He picked up your story so that we could move into life and pick up theirs. Today, maybe for the first time, you need to turn to your spouse and lay down your story and pick up theirs. We need to put behind us the childish idea of love. And we need to begin to step into all that God created it to be, so that the world might know what love truly is and who our Father truly is. Will you pray with me? Father, it's so countercultural for us. So countercultural for us to live this way. Everything inside of us says, live for your story, write your story. It's all about your story. Father, I pray that today, for those who are here, that they would be overwhelmed by the truth that you laid down your story and picked up theirs. That they don't have to hold tightly to their story anymore because you've written it. And every day you're championing it, celebrating it, cheering for them. Father, I pray that we would let go of the meaningless goals, dreams, and hopes and accomplishments of this world, and we would pick up the dream and the goal that you lived your life for, that people might know what love truly is. They might know the Father who's defined by it. Father, I pray that would be what drives us. And that because of that, we would choose day after day after day the way of love, your way. In Jesus' name, amen.